Nationwide, everybody knows my name. They're like, mama, that's Kenny Montgomery. He sings that song we like. Yeah, boy, that's me. Roll out the trailer, I'm flossing. Them Hoosier tires glossing. Them cold kind, we're tossing. They know I came to wreck it, yet I rarely bring out a caution. I hit the high side, boy, I park it for Brian Clausen. I do them like Kyle Larson.
Welcome to Throttled Up, the podcast. Throttled Up will be a weekly podcast featuring Matt and Dustin. We plan to discuss the legendary Brownstown Speedway, along with other local dirt tracks, Eldora, Salem Speedway, and all of your IndyCar and NASCAR news. Don't miss an episode of Throttled Up, the podcast.
Hey, Mo, are you going to win it? Yeah, I hope y'all brought some stamps, because y'all know I'm about to send it on there. Dirt, 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 I'm all about that. Dirt. I'm throwing dirt, 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 dirt. I miss that. Dirt, 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 dirt. Gotta get back to it. I'm a dirt trackaholic. Call it what you call it. Saturday night, I am so Kenny Wallace on that.
Welcome back to Throttled Up, episode 3 this week. We have another guest in studio this week with us. Joss Moffitt is here with us, sprint car driver from Southern Indiana. Welcome, Joss. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Doing wonderful.
Doing great.
Matt, another big week, but a wet week. Again, we're still crossing our fingers, holding out hope that as we get closer to Saturday night, it's going to dry up, but Mother Nature's not playing real nice right now.
Yeah, I know when we started this podcast, we planned on talking about highlights of local racing, but right now, everybody's garage racing because there's way too much, liquid on the ground for any highlights right now.
Yeah, so, Joss, we wanted to kind of just jump in here with you, but I'm going to ask for you, before we even get started, let us know who your sponsors are that help you. Because one thing that when Matt and I kind of started this thing that we wanted to make sure of is we gave drivers a chance to kind of promote their sponsors when they came on. So who helps you get to the track every weekend?
Well, I have a handful of people. My buddy Brad Bennick at Momentum Racing Suspensions, he does a great job on our shocks and stuff like that. He gives me a discount and a lot of information on the chassis setups and stuff. And he's just a very good mentor for me. And I get Hoosier Tire. They help me out quite a bit. Simpson Racing Products. I have Nate Brandon Lawn Care. He jumped on board this year and helped me out. So I'm really excited about that. And I have a partner in my race team this year, Orville Wright. He's a partner on my Silver Crown team, and he jumped on board, and that really stepped up the game for me, so I can look down the road and race more frequently and get another car put together, and that's really about all I have. That and Kevin Thomas, he does steering gears for me, and he does those for free, which is pretty awesome, and I love that guy. But I have some people, it's just not very many, but just enough to keep me plugging away.
Awesome. And free is good no matter what you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. I like free.
Kevin can probably help you out a little bit on more than just the steering gear. I mean, he's had many, many hours in the seat of a sprint car, so he could probably help you out,
Oh, absolutely. If I was half the driver that guy was, I'd win a lot of races, I'll tell you that right now.
I mean, he was a bottom feeder, always stay on the bottom of the racetrack, but, he's a man, he could wheel a sprint car.
Oh, man, I need that kind of patience. I need to see if he can rub it off on me.
So when we get to started talking about kind of your history and things, where did this passion and love for racing come from? And I kind of know a little bit, but for our listeners that may not know you as well, where does this come from for you?
Man, it started when I was just a little squirt. My dad always painted Indy cars and sprint cars, so I was always around it. And growing up, I had some friends that raced and made me really anxious and jealous that I couldn't do it. So when I got old enough, I ended up buying a sprint car. And let me back up a little bit. I was, as Matt knows, I was helping out some guys like Pete Abel and Jeff Wilson and Kevin Thomas. And so I learned how to work on them somewhat. But when I bought my own sprint car, I wanted to race. And I could have went like a go-kart deal or a three-quarter midget, but the problem was is I was poor, and I needed to do it now if I wanted to race sprint cars, because I knew once I jumped on a different position, a different role of how I was going to race, I was going to spend all my funds and not be able to move up. So I was around it all my life, and the people I knew, it was just kind of destined for it to happen, so that's kind of how it went.
And that is a pretty big jump to jump straight into the sprint car world.
Yeah, I tell you what, hot laps, I crap myself, you know what I mean? I got lapped by Chris Coors three times in hot laps, and I thought I was flying. I was probably going 20 miles an hour, and everything fell out of control to me.
Yeah, I was going to say, when I met you, you was a very young kid at that time, you know, because when I was next-door neighbors to Rod Reynolds there, and your dad, you know, was over there a lot, you know, when Kevin Thomas drove for Rodney, and then you'd come with your dad, and you know, then Jeff, you know, was over there and all of them. So I kind of watched you grow up for a while, and then all of a sudden, you know, I don't live next to Rodney anymore, and I hear that you're racing a sprint car. I was like, holy cow, you know what? When did this happen?
What happened to this little idiot? What happened to him? You can't be riding ahead to get a race car for one thing, let alone a sprint car without driving anything, right?
But, You mentioned your dad. I mean, he's probably the most famous guy in sprint car racing that's not a driver. I mean, if you go to a sprint car race and you bring up Billy Moffitt, everybody knows your dad, you know, because he has painted something for somebody, you know, at some time. So, you kind of come in there with everybody knowing your dad, so everybody knows you because you was with dad all the time. So, you know, you kind of start with that.
Oh, yeah, it helps. And I tell you what, if it wasn't for who he established himself as, of knowing all the people he did, I wouldn't be able to, I wouldn't have been able to get to where I am. And another sponsor I left out is Roger Williams of Williams Precision Engines, and he's a huge help, and he's a major part of my race team. He's taught me a lot, you know, about engine program and stuff like that, and I help him with the engines, and I wouldn't be able to do it without him throughout the years, because whenever I needed somebody, he was always there to step up and get me to the racetrack, no matter what the cost or hours late night in the shop or whatever it took. He dedicated himself to my racing program, and he believed in me. And that's another, like, he met us through my dad, and if it wasn't for my father, I wouldn't have got some of his connections like him and Kevin Thomas and being able to be around sprint car racing and growing up and meeting all these other people. And I think it helped me with Hoosier Tire, too, because the history he had with everybody else. And so it's kind of weird how my dad, him being a little lonely painter and a little liquid wrench, like some people call him, kind of was like a stepping stone for me.
Can you paint? I'm gonna ask it right now.
Man, I could try, but I'm terrible.
Okay, so you got the driving skills. That's all right.
Right.
I was gonna say, you're probably not like Dad, because I mean he's slick, man. He can lay the paint down. So
he
now, what year did you jump in the sprint car? Let's get the timeline started here.
Man, I started with 2004 as my rookie season. I was 24 years old.
That's about what I was thinking. There it was in the early 2000s there, and then your first night, was it at Lawrenceburg, or did you go somewhere else? Or
yeah, it was at Lawrenceburg.
And I'm going to ask this because I know where Matt kind of leans. We've talked about this on this podcast, and I lean a little bit different way. And I know your family, you know, kind of your upbringing led you to sprint cars. But have you ever considered jumping in anything else other than that sprint car?
Man, absolutely. I really wanted to try a late model. And Bashilli walked up to me and goes, hey, I want you to run my late model for me. And I was like, man, that'd be awesome. Let's do this. And he's like, you got to pay me. I was like, no, I'm not going to pay you. I'll run for free, but I'm not going to pay you.
I don't know if Dad would let you get in the late model, though, because he pretty locked down with the sprint cars there, so
he would. He thought it was a cool idea. When I mentioned it. Yeah, I mean, if I would love to, if somebody gave me an opportunity. I've had an opportunity to race modified a couple of times, but it just never worked out. I was supposed to do that big race they have down at Lawrenceburg, and but it just never happened, and which is a bummer. Roger, he offered me his modified one night when he had his, but I didn't want to get him out of the seat just to do it. So,
well, and we've talked about it, you know, last year when Chase Briscoe came into Brownstown for the No Way Out and jumped in a late model. That was a cool experience to see a guy that has always wheeled a sprint car and that family heritage as well. I think that'd make for a really neat night to see you in a late model a little bit. And, you know, there's a whole different element that comes into that, banging the doors a lot more than what you can, obviously, with the sprint cars, because that usually ends in a real exciting wreck.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can't really rub that much. And we do bang a little bit, but not like the late models. Yeah, and the late models always intrigue me because all the they're more technical than the sprint car, in my opinion, you know, with the, what do you call them, lift bars and all suspension and stuff. And yeah, the things are pretty awesome, man. I really appreciate that kind of racing. And people get me wrong because I am a sprint car guy, but I still love the sport of dirt racing, and I just always want to see it continue to grow. And if it wasn't for late models, it wouldn't make sprint cars what it is, and I think they both kind of counterbalance each other.
I'm glad to hear you say that because, you know, I am a late model guy. I mean, you guys knew that when I lived, you know, next to Rodney and hung out with all you guys. But I think anymore that both of them feed each other. You know, there's some technology in a sprint car that a late model uses, and there's some technology in a late model that the sprint cars can adapt to, and it does help. And I like to see, you know, the sprint car drivers jump into late models and late model guys try to jump into sprint cars, but it seems like a sprint car driver can convert to a late model, but a late model driver is hard for a sprint car because they're used to banging. You know, you mentioned Jeff Wilson. I mean, he had a hard time when he went from a late model to a sprint car because you got to drive him totally different.
Absolutely. That's the thing about Jeff is that, man, he has so much talent. That guy, I mean, I love that guy. He's one of the most talented racers I've ever met, and he jumped in the Pete's and Rodney's sprint car. And that dude, he had the speed right out of the gate, but, man, he couldn't keep it off his head. And I was worried about him because he was so tall and his head was sticking out of the cage. I'm like, Jeff, you know, we need to do something about this. Oh, I'll duck. You can't duck. You know what I mean? Your head's going to still whip around and smack the dirt. So, but that dude, he is a phenomenal racer. And he told me that the problem he had in the sprint car was I think he was trying to hold his breath all the time because he's trying to get too excited. I mean, once he calmed down, man, he was as good as it gets out there.
Yeah, he told me that when he first started, too, that when they dropped the green flag, he said he was holding his breath to concentrate, and he'd run out of breath because he wasn't breathing while he was driving. So in a feature, you know, he'd run out of breath about five laps in.
Yeah.
Well, it is a, you know, and the whole idea of sprint cars, I think, and I love it all. I mean, I agree. I lean a little bit more towards the sprint car. I grew up south of Bloomington and spent a lot of times at Bloomington Speedway, and I know that when I listened to some of your previous interviews, that that's kind of a love-hate relationship for you at Bloomington Speedway. But, you know, I think in both of them, when you – and I hope that our fans – and one thing that we're trying to do with this is really encourage people to come out to the tracks. To see the talent that's at a lot of these local tracks on a Saturday night is unbelievable. And the ability that guys have to make these cars – get in positions and set things up and make passes is unbelievable. So I would love to see you be able to jump in a late model at some point. And if anybody that does listen to us has one that would like to let Josh jump in, I would encourage that completely.
I'll be fair game. Just give me a call, please.
So before we started, you said your sponsors kind of got you contracted to Lawrenceburg Speedway now. So that's pretty much where you're going to be on Saturday nights then.
Yeah, when we're not running the Silver Crown deal, and whenever Lawrenceburg's not running, I might go do some local USAC shows, and I like to do some Kokomo, and I'm entertaining the idea of me running Bloomington on a Friday night here and there, but my problem is I've ran probably 15 features over there and not finished with a single one, so that place is, I don't know, like a little old man down the infield reaches up and grabs a hold of me every time. I don't understand it.
Now, do you go up and race Gas City at all? Do you make it up there and race up there at all?
I have a handful of times, but the problem is I always have to take off so much from work, and I don't like doing that because that just takes away from me financially, and I'd rather work than play on Saturday and Sunday. Bloomington's easy because, you know, I get off work. I might take off a half hour and still make it in time. But the thing is like I have a car owner, Orville Wright, and him and his buddies, they camp out down at Lawrenceburg, so they want me there whenever sprint cars are there. So that's the only thing, but I don't mind being tied down to that if it comes to money. You know, he's helped me with the bills, so that does. I don't complain. I love that place. It's probably one of my favorite racetracks ever.
I was going to say, Lawrenceburg's not a bad track to be tied to either, so that's a pretty good sprint car track.
Now you're track champion there 1 year, right?
I've won it three different
times.
That's
what I thought. Okay, yeah.
I won it on the original, the quarter mile, and I guess it's not original, but because all the years have been around, but I'm the only guy that's won it on the quarter mile and the new track. I won it in 2007, 2009, and I won it in 2015. I could have won it maybe two other times, but a couple of those other seasons I chose to go kind of bounce around, I still almost won the thing. So
that's impressive.
Yeah, it's definitely a pretty cool feat. I want to get at least one more, so I'm in that elite group now. There's only three of us have won it that many times, but I'd like to get up there with Greg Staub. He's won it five, so if I get at least closer to him, maybe I get above the shitter at Lawrenceburg on the Hall of Fame.
Who's the other two that's won it three times?
I think Randy Kinzer. I had to.
So you're
Kerry Norris. I had to look back.
So I mean, Kerry Norris is, you know, around this area, he's well known for the sprint cars. So, I mean, yeah. You're in an elite group there with them guys. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I can't remember. I think that Butch Wilkerson's one.
I know Butch is in the Hall of Fame down there, and Pete Abel's in the Hall of Fame down there.
So. Yeah, and man, I felt so bad because Drew, he told me about it like 3 months before it was going to happen. He's like, hey, they're going to induct my dad in the Hall of Fame down there. I don't know when it's going to be. I think it's beginning of the season, he told me. And finally, the week came, he told me. So he's, I won't come grab you. It's between the heat races, like our heat races and the Hornets. You got to be up on the stage, but I come grab you. And I went up there because he didn't come around, and there was nobody around. So I had to come back to the pits and make final adjustments on the car. I made it back up there, and it was already over. And, man, I wanted to see Pete. I wanted to see he had a little twinkle in his eye, a little tear, you know what I mean?
So with Lawrenceburg being home, where else, I mean, where's that bucket list track to go race at? Do you have some that you would just love to get that sprint car out on?
Man, I want to go to Knoxville so bad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, whether it be wing or non-wing. And that's the thing I want to pursue is I want to try to build another engine. I really want to get some wings and do some wing racing again next year. I can't do it this year. I have one motor, and one bullet's not enough. I mean, no. That's like three or four knots on one deal. So I just I want to do, like, Knoxville and maybe, like, Eagle Raceway. I just want to go play around, go out west a little bit. And I wouldn't mind maybe going to Hopstad again. I went and ran an outlaw show there once, and it was an embarrassing night. But, you know, there's a couple other places I like to go.
Hopstad's a fast little joint. I mean, they fly around there. I went down for Indy Sprint Week about 4 years ago and watched a race down there, and that was an impressive joint to watch them guys race there. So.
Oh, I bet. I remember it was, I think it was 2006, it was a TV show for Outdoor Network, and I was behind Chad Kimmenall and Jack Hodenshield in hot laps, and we both came, well, all three of us came out of four, and we was just standing them up, and those two guys, they had such huge wheelies, I could see the number on the top wing, and I was like, wow, and I was still standing mine up, and I could still see them. It was the coolest thing ever.
That's an experience that most people don't ever get the opportunity to have. I mean, when you're standing yours up and you're seeing, you know, the numbers ahead of you, that's pretty wild.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Of course, mine wasn't a big wheelie. I just barely had mine off the ground. Those guys, they're on the back bumper, you know what I mean?
What's the most exciting thing you've ever done in, you know, a sprint car? You know, good or bad? You know, bad flip or just an exciting evening?
I can give you a couple. I mean, like, you know, the wins are always the most, you know what I mean? Like, some of the wins I've had, like my first race at Lawrenceburg in 2007 that I won, you know, it was like a USAC show, there's 50-some cars there, and you name them, they're all there, and I won that night. And I remember winning one night in Illinois, it was Flora, Clay County Speedway. And I remember it was I was actually using the wall as a side bite in one and two, and that's how close it was. There's no more cushion, but I was able to, it's kind of like a steel wall, I can't explain it, and I was able to use that and kind of make the front end pull up off the ground, you know what I mean? And that stuff like that is it's so rewarding after you get that win, because you're on the verge of crashing, and you get done, it's like, wow, how did I do that? And the announcers even asked me, and I was like, I don't know, I just do it, you know? But, like, I had a moment, 2 years ago, it was a Bucket Outlaw Sprint Series race, and I had a problem in my heat race. It was at Eldora Speedway, and so I missed it by one. I had to run the B main, and I was running third, and I was running down the leaders, and it was right up against the fence like normal. And I was just wide open. I'm going to back straight away. My front axle broke, and the car turned dead right, and it took off flipping. And I ended up, I thought I was going to die. I'm not going to lie. So I'm laying there upside down, and I hear somebody like, "Moff, you okay, Moff?" I was like, "What the heck is going on?" And I just shut the engine off. It was Chad Bay's fluke. He crawled through the little window of the fence, and he thought I was hurt, you know. So he's checking on me. He got there before the safety crew did.
That's the craziest thing, I think, when you watch sprints. And not that, you know, late models don't have serious wrecks, but when a sprint goes bad, it's usually multiple times over the top, and you're going to bounce around quite a bit because there's just nothing there but engine. I mean, it's just weight.
Late models don't have that huge right rear hanging out that, like you said, your guys are bouncing them off the walls coming out of the corners. And, you know, sometimes that grabs and it turns that front end right into the wall too, and then, you know, it's downhill from there.
It does. I've learned by running against the cushion when it gets real sketchy up toward the wall, I've learned over the years to, you don't try to drive off straight. Just go ahead and rotate the car, keep it angled, and the tire stood up. So if you do hit it, it's not going to knock the front end over. And I see so many guys, you be running the fence, it'd be in front of you, and they keep flirting with it. Next thing, you know, they plow it, and you're trying to get away so you're not getting involved in a wreck. You know, it's amazing to study them. And you're dancing yourself. You're like, when's it going to happen? You know what I mean?
And you guys race so close that when one does bicycle or get end over end, I mean, you guys have nowhere to go. So, I mean, you might be doing a fine job, and then the next guy is, you know, he's flipping in front of you, and you get collected because of that.
Absolutely. They're just laying on top of you sometimes, and you can't go anywhere. I mean, the inertia carries you that same direction, and no matter what you try to do, it's only gravity, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And a whole lot of money bouncing through the air.
A lot of money. You see dollar signs flying through the air.
The cash register's just ringing as it goes. Yeah.
Start crying like a little baby.
You know, going back a little bit again, and I know that we talked about your family, you know, history with it, but who were some of those big heroes you had growing up, you know, that you wanted to mimic when you were able to get out there?
Oh, man. Like, the first one I just had to say would be Steve Kanzer. I hate to say this if he's going to listen, Dave Darling, Kevin Thomas. I was a big wing guy earlier, but when I started getting a non-wing when I was a teenager, it was like those guys are phenomenal. And like when J.J. Yaley came over town, he changed the sport of non-wing sprint car racing, and that guy was the most spectacular I've ever seen. Like he would rotate the car, and you could see he looked like he's going to spin out midway down the straightaway, and that's how he entered the corner. And I never seen anything like that, and you still don't to this day. And stuff like that just really, really excited you and made you want to be that guy. You know what I mean? Because it made the crowd just stand up in the stands and pump their fists, and it was cool.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. It's been a long time since I've seen JJ drive a sprint car, but you are right. I mean, he was turning left before he ever got to the corner, you know, and you see some guys try to do that now, but not like you said. JJ was turning when you're thinking, what's he doing? You know, and he was way set up, you know, early, so.
Oh, yeah, it's like, is he going to spin out? No, he's actually making a corner, and he just passed a guy, too. That's incredible.
So who else, you know, who's those were your heroes. Who's your rival? Who do you love? And not, I don't want to bring up, like, you know, bad blood or something like that, but who's the guy you love to compete against?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. There's so many of them out there. You know, there for a while, it was my buddy Matt Westfall. We're close. We like to drink a lot of beer together. But for some reason, no matter where we raced, we was always there. We were racing for the win or running for third, or even if we was running for ninth, it didn't matter. We was always both of us dicing, and we'd race as hard as we could, but we never would lay a wheel on each other. And there's a couple of guys, like when I was younger starting out, I idolized Brandon Petty, and I started getting I can compete against him. I mean, that guy was so good. It's a shame he's not in a sprint car still. And there's a couple of them. John Memmer is one of them. Now it's probably Sean Westerfield down there at Lawrenceburg. When I show up, he's got his game on, and I had to get my cowboy boots on and be ready to fight. You know what I mean? And I live for that, man. And also a couple of times there, it was Brady Short. I had a really challenge with him. So there's those guys. It really makes it exciting to go compete against them because you know that you have to be on your game to beat them. And when you do beat those guys, It makes you feel like King Kong. You don't want to tell anybody that, but it does. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, it's sweeter. I mean, you want to beat the best. I mean, it's, again, nothing against other guys, but it's when you show up to a local show and nobody else is there that can really run with you, it doesn't mean as much. You know, when you got Brady and some of those guys there, that's pretty special when you pull it in victory lane then.
Oh, it is pretty special. I will have to tell you guys one quick story, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Always.
One of my most fun races ever, and this is going to be funny to some people or maybe not. It's just funny to me. But anyways, Brock Burton, one of my best friends. And great,
two-star.
Yeah, great talent. I mean, if that guy would race more, what is he, race six times a year?
It's about six times, yeah, on modified. Yeah, he drives UMP modified, number two stars. He's his number.
And he wins. I mean, where he runs top three, it just I'm like, Brock, if you guys would race. So he's running a sprint car when it's back in 2005, I think. It might have been, maybe 2006. We were both running in the back of the B main, like dead last. And we was both sliding each other and crisscrossing. And this lasted for the whole 12 laps. And I tell you what, I was laughing, and it was like the funnest time of my life. We were both horrible. I think we even got lapped. And that sorry sucker, he pedaled coming out of four and beat me. I was like, dang you, why'd you have to do that? You're supposed to stay on the gas, you know what I mean?
So even then, when you guys weren't good that night, you probably put on a heck of a show at the back of the pack just to watch you guys mix it up back there. So
exactly.
As a fan, sometimes the best racing isn't in the front. You watch those guys in the back, you know, because that's where it's at. And you brought up Matt Westfall. I watched him race a late model four times at Eldora, and that is one guy that can transition from a sprint car to a late model because, you know, I knew he raced sprint cars, and he rolled out for a heat race over there in that late model, and he hauled it into turn one at Eldora like you would a sprint car. And I was like, my gosh, this guy means business, and he's very impressive in about anything he's in, so I bet he was fun to race with.
He was. He's a very talented guy, and it's kind of funny, like, I go play around at Waynesfield, which is one of my favorite racetracks, Waynesfield, Ohio. And it's one of those deals there for a while. It's just Matt and I and maybe like a guy like Luke Hall or Dallas Hewitt. It'd just be us guys and Meserol. He'd show up and be a select few of us guys. It wouldn't happen to get real slick in the cushion and get about a foot off the wall. Well, those guys are scared to death of that. And I'm like, yeah, this is my kind of track. And they would water it. They spritz it right for the feature. And everybody's afraid it's going to be slimy. No, I mean, you get up there and you're pulling wheelies and you're banging it off the fence. And Matt and I would always do that. We'd be that guy no matter where we start. So we'd always end up top three because of that. But his biggest deal is he always want to go buy a cheeseburger. You know, I can't eat before I race. You know, it'll make me sick. So he's like, Moffy, goes, let's go get cheeseburgers. I don't want to eat because, man, I tell you what, it's going to be side by side. He's going to beat your ass if I eat the cheeseburger. And you know what? He would beat me after he eat that cheeseburger.
If it's not broke, don't fix it.
That's right.
Every time. You know, so let's talk a little bit about, you know, kind of this season. We've talked about Lawrenceburg, but, you know, what is the goal for this season? What's the plan? You are going to chase the season points at Lawrenceburg?
Yeah, I'm going to chase the points at Lawrenceburg. I think I'm going to miss, like, one race down there because of the Silver Crown deal, but I'm going to do the full USAC Silver Crown Series minus Phoenix. I'm not going to do that. I'm not ready for that. We're going 190 mile an hour there and only have five races on my belt with pavement. And plus, we can't afford it, but E3 spark plugs jumped on board again with that deal. And thanks to Roger Williams and Orville Wright again for that, for let me be their hired shoe. And we're going to do the whole series, which I think there's only five dirt races and five pavement races left for us. But I'm excited. We just put together a new beast car. We're going to go test down at Salem this Saturday morning before we go run Lawrenceburg sprint car show. So
that's cool.
Hopefully we shake it down. I can find some speed. I was out last year. We had no power steering, and I didn't realize it. I just thought I was just being a little baby. I was wearing blisters on my hands, and it was just horrible. I was like a second and a half off the pace every time I hit the track on pavement, and I just want to crawl in a hole and, like, hide. You know what I mean?
Me and Dustin might have to show up in Salem Saturday morning then if you're going to be down there. We might just have to venture into the speedway there.
Yeah.
What is that transition like going from dirt to pavement?
Man, it's not as challenging as I thought it would be because we took our dirt car to IRP the first night out on pavement, and I was like 12th quicker out of the box, and I was like, this ain't right, you know what I mean? But then people started telling me how to drive, and I started getting slower because I changed how I was doing my thing. But the only thing that's really challenging to me is the fact that you can't touch the throttle. I mean, like, Cody Swanson, he comes down to me, and Cody, I'm surprised he's not in NASCAR. He should be, because that dude is so talented. And he's like, Joss, he goes, you're gassing it too hard. I said, I'm only giving like a quarter throttle through the corner. He's like, no. He goes, an eighth of the throttle is all you want to give it. I'm like, wow, okay, you know. So that's the biggest thing is the finesse part and not the controlled slide. But other than that, it's all hand in hand. It's the same. You're just going in a circle.
That's fucking right. You have to remind yourself not to set the car. I mean, yeah. Because, I mean, you've raced dirt for a lot of years now that – I know in your mind you feel like you need to set the car for the corner, and when you're on asphalt, you probably have to keep remind yourself not to set it, don't you?
Yes, and like the corner entry to me is the biggest difference, but center out, it's all the same. It's just like when it's real slick, you want to try to position the posture of your car as like you are on asphalt and you go forward, and so it kind of comes in the hand as far as that goes. But you know, another thing too is challenging to me is that I don't have enough pavement experience is trying to figure out the lines. It's like dirt, you can see a cushion, you can see like when it's slick, you see a patch of moisture, you got a diamond down and hit on the exit over here or right in the middle over there. And in asphalt, you don't necessarily have that. I mean, it just looks like you're driving McDonald's, you know what I mean?
So it's obvious you look way forward to the dirt races than you do the asphalt races in the Silver Crown car.
I tell you what, man, the miles are so cool. Like DuCoin, it's beginning of the night, there's a nice heavy cushion to lean on. You're going 155 mile an hour, and you're just blurping throttle back wide open, leaning on it, and it's so cool. Like, we showed up at Springfield, and it's the first time I've been to a mile, and I'm watching these other guys. I'm in the car, and they're hot lapping, you know, and they're just screaming 9 grand down the straightaway, and you're going 150, and you're watching that, and you're like, oh, my God, I think I'm going to puke, you know? I have to go out here and do this crap.
But what kind of speed do you carry into the corner at Spring? Because, I mean, like you said, you're not scuffing much off at all then, because those are huge sweeping corners over there.
Yeah, it's up about 160. So, I mean, you're hauling the mail, and you can really feel it. And the thing is, though, about those cars, the tires stand up so much, they really float a lot. Thank you. But it's pretty awesome, man. I mean, I didn't realize how much I would enjoy the mile. And here's the thing about a mile that people don't understand that never done it. Is you see those long, sweepy corners? They're not easy to turn.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, some of these quarter miles you run, it's easier to turn on. And I couldn't believe it. So I'm like out there rolling around, and we just keep getting tighter. I'm like, man, this thing won't turn on a mile. What's going on here? I can't say a 40-acre field is basically the same thing, but it's pretty wild.
I figured they would be easier to turn because they are so long. Because, you know, I've been to DuCoin and Springfield, and yeah. I mean, those are beautiful corners over there. So.
Yeah, and you would think so until you get on them, and especially when you have a car, you don't have enough stagger, and you have too much left your weight, and it just wants to go straight toward the fence, so you have to really throw it sideways, and then you're hanging, you know, so then it grabs the grip, and then it gets tight and pushes again, and you bust it loose. You do that 5 times through the corner, like, man, I'm wore out, and I'm over boxing. I haven't made it straightaway yet.
No, I know the Silver Crown car is longer than your sprint car, and I'm sure it's also heavier. Do you got to drive the car differently just because of the length of the car compared to the sprint?
They drive pretty much about the same. I'll go ahead and put it in perspective. Like the Silver Crown car, if people don't know, it's a steel block 360 versus what we have, a 410 aluminum. And we're pushing an almost 800 horsepower with our Silver Crown. And it's 8 inches longer. It's basically the same. It's the same manufacturer builds my sprint car, but they just build it from the cockpit forward. This is a sprint car, but cockpit back is 8 inches longer, and they accommodate the fuel cell, which was a 70-gallon tank.
I was going to say, yeah, the fuel cells are huge on the Silver Crown cars.
Yeah, they're ungodly. And yeah, basically, so there's a little bit less power, and they do weigh another 150 pounds, especially when you get a full fuel load. They're really a lot heavier, but they're a little slower reacting, but it's still like driving a sprint car. I mean, like a Terre Haute, there's a little rut you lean on. And I'm telling you what, getting on the right rear is nothing like getting on the right rear in a champ car. It really bangs on that thing.
So how much does it change when you're driving as that fuel load changes? I mean, obviously you get the setup right for it, but throughout the night, you know, in a long feature, how much does that change the handling of the car for you?
It changes quite a bit. Like, beginning of the night when you have full fuel load, you can't just blast it in a corner and then toss it in there, because that fuel will really carry you and wants to kind of try to spin you out. And, like, when you accelerate up out of the corner, you wouldn't believe how sluggish that thing is. You wouldn't think 800 horsepower you put on the floor and it's just bogging. And it's like, man, this is worse than a little Honda Civic, you know what I mean?
And I don't think a lot of fans sitting in the seats understand how much those cars change throughout the night. You know, I think they, and I totally understand you guys are wrenching on them constantly trying to get the best setup all night long, but you go through a lot of stages throughout the night, from hot laps to your heat races to the feature. There's a lot of variables there that change.
Oh, there is. You know, the Silver Crown deal, it's amazing. It starts out heavy, and it's like anything else. It'd be like running a Fun Fest. You start out a heavy track, then you go qualify, it's getting pretty slick. Then you go out and run your 100 laps, your 100-mile race, and it ends up usually laying down rubber, and that's something a guy needs to remember. And it's hard to fathom that, really, because you have to look at lap, you know, 30 on and not the first. But the thing that confused me about the whole deal, this being my last year, being rookie year, everybody kept telling me, and they're talking about old school Silver Crown days, you got to baby them in first half the race, then you go for it. But these guys, they drive so hard, dropped a green flag, that it left me behind a couple of nights, so I had to really focus on driving hard. And they're not easy to drive. It's just like driving a sprint car for 100 miles. You get so tired, and you just feel like you want to puke when you get done.
Well, the old school days, though, you guys didn't – I mean, you guys have adjustable shocks in all four corners now, right? I mean,
right.
In the old days, you set the shocks and you rolled out and you just had what you – you know, whatever you had is what you raced with. But now, as the car changes, you can adjust the shocks with the car, right?
Yeah, you can adjust them on the fly, which is nice. And the straightaways are long enough, you have plenty of time to reach up there and put a couple of clicks in it. And we have radio communications, so you can talk to your spotter and your crew guys, and you can kind of figure out what you need to do there, too.
Did it take you a while to learn the adjustable shocks?
No, because I've had them in my sprint car since 2008. So it's the same shock package I run. They just changed the valving just a tad bit to compensate for the heavy car. But there's this one night in my sprint car, we was running the King of Indiana Sprint Series race, and Chris Windham and I, he started 8th, and I started 10th. I remember this like it was yesterday. And he made it the 3rd, and I made it the 5th, and it was about 8 laps to go, and we had a yellow flag, and I'm gassing it up trying to keep heating my tires. I pull up next to him, he's gassing it, and he's adjusting on his knobs. This is before I bought my adjustable shocks, and I was like, well, that's sorry, sucker. So he ended up going on and winning the race, and I ended up running 3rd, but I couldn't keep up with him after that. And I called Scott Bennick the next day, and I said, hey, man, I need some shocks. You know what I mean?
I figured out why I couldn't run with them.
Right, exactly.
It's amazing, though, how much, you know, Justin, those shocks do help, you know, the guys.
It's huge. There's a night, one time, where I started on the front row. Now my car was horrible, and I backed up to 6th. This is at Lawrenceburg. This is probably 2010. And I remember John Memory got the lead, and there's a nice big gnarly cushion. And I just dropped him like a, you know, a lead weight. And I was like, I got to do something. So I started twisting around my shocks, and I ended up running back up to 2nd, ran him down, and ran out of time. But it changed my car 100%. I just changed the compression on my right rear and just tied my left front down a little more and messed my left rear a little bit, and that thing just took off. I wouldn't believe that, you know, a couple of clicks here and here, then a couple of clicks there makes that much of a difference, but it does.
I used to, you know, and I used to hear, because, you know, back in the day before you had the adjustable shocks, you had to buy every different shock, you know, and the guys would, you know, take a shock off and put a shock on. I'm like, you know, you're really making that much difference. But now the world of the adjustable shocks, it's amazing.
It is.
You know, how
amazing
much one or two clicks will do.
Yeah. That's the thing, too, about adjustable shocks is people get a wrong idea about it, because these gas shocks, they're expensive. But thing is, you only have to buy 4 of them instead of buying, you know, 12 shocks to get the same effect. So you're actually going to spend more money if you buy the, you know, the other way around.
Oh, yeah.
I'll go ahead. I was waiting a little bit. One thing that we've kind of talked about, Josh, as we've kind of started this podcast, is the idea of increasing, you know, race attendance. And you've shown that, you know, you're passionate about dirt track racing. You love seeing a good show. You talked about, you know, even the late model side and things. What, in your opinion, is the how do we get those fans back on to these tracks on Saturday nights?
Man, there's too much entertainment to mess with, you know, like between stupid things like, you know, internet and video games. I grew up with that stuff, but you look at these kids these days, they just need to go out there and watch a race, and parents need to take them, because every person that I know that's taking their kid out, they're like, wow, that's so exciting. It's so much better than staying at home. And that's the problem with today's society. There's not enough of that, and it's getting away from that. And like NASCAR, I don't understand why they're doing some of these Saturday night races and stuff where these people need to be at a short track. But the major problem with it is, too, is the fact that it costs so much money for a family to go. I mean, you have a wife and you take two kids, you're going to spend, what, $80 probably, or not more. You're going to go get cotton candy, hot dogs, cheeseburgers, Coke, you know. And so it just costs too much money. And it just, I would really like to see more entertainment during throughout the night. Like Orville, my co-owner, he has an idea. He's wanting to do a deal where, of course, he can afford to do this. He's wanting to buy a bunch of shirts, okay, and raffle them off. So basically, you're going to sell a shirt for $20 and it has a, you know, a number on it. And he still might end up pulling this off. And it's going to be like the Joss Moffat fan club, basically. So if he rolls this number out of the ball cage, and you have a number 5 on your end of your sleeve, then you're going to get $100 for that night. And if I win that feature, and you got that number, you're going to get $500.
That's pretty cool. But yeah. Like I said, you know, the average guy at a racetrack can't do that. You know, like if you didn't have him, you couldn't do that with your shirts. I mean, that's a good way to get. You know me. I'm addicted to race shirts. You know, that's about all I wear. And but you know, for a guy to just give shirts out like that, I know it's really hard.
It is hard, and it just stuff like that would get people more in tune. And somebody wouldn't have to give out $100. If you just gave out, let's say you got costing shirts, you get 300 shirts made, and you got $10 a piece in them. Okay, let's sell them for $10 a piece. Don't make your money on your shirt. At least you get your money back. Then what you do is you take money out of your winnings. Let's say if you have that shirt on, and we'll roll the dice. You know what I mean? You get that number on that shirt, then you get $20 out of my prize winnings, which a guy wouldn't, he could afford that, but it would get more people there in the stands, and you can buy more shirts, and you can probably start selling them for $12 a piece, and you know, there's some guys out there probably buy a bunch of shirts that sit on them forever, but if you get a game like that going, get more people in tune, and they'd be willing to buy your shirt, you actually probably end up making money down the road, and end up bringing their family members, say, hey, we have a chance to win money and have entertainment, and so I think his idea is a really cool idea. It's just about incorporating into the racetrack so it doesn't take time out of your hands, so you're not one calling the name, and you got to have people selling the shirts, which is a problem too. But, I mean, it's just if we as the racers can get fans more involved with us too, I think that would help. And you never know, maybe a little clown on a motorcycle riding down a straightaway.
And, you know, you brought that good point up, because when we try to do extra things at a racetrack, like you said, you know, me as an announcer, I have to start taking time out, and then the action on the track has stopped, and then the people that maybe not interested in that are complaining that there's not racing again. And that's the hard
balancing
act you have right there is, you know, a lot of people don't want none of that extra stuff. They just want to watch the racing and go on. And then, you know, it seems like the newer fans, they like all that extra, you know, so you got to kind of balance the old school guys with the new school, and you know, find that good medium there. Because I know we do kids night about 3 times a year at Brownstown, and the old dedicated guys that's been there since the 70s, they complain the whole time, because we, you know, we go out on the front stretch and we do bicycle races, or we do a tire roll race, or we do something with the kids, and they're complaining the whole time. They just want to bring the race cars back out. But
yeah, but I think that's a great idea what you're doing there, because I mean, let's face it, you know, the kids are our future generation of this sport. If the kids aren't around, we're not going to have late model and sprint car racing, and that makes me sad to think about that.
Well, and another thing, I think that, you know, when it comes to that too, on just a regular show, it's tough for the track to know what the track is actually going to be like. Some nights you got to work the track constantly, you know, and as you know, those track guys and crew are constantly trying to get the track to come in. Well, those nights are the nights you really need some of that filler entertainment, because, you know, that's the part when it's tough. Nobody likes to watch the water truck race around the track. No offense to any water truck drivers out there, but that's not what the excitement brings. But then there's other nights the track's pretty good that you wouldn't need all that time built in. So it is a tough balancing act. But I think, too, what you guys are talking about with the T-shirts, and that's something everybody we've kind of talked to in this podcast so far has talked about, is creating a connection with a driver. You know, when you grow up and you've talked about some of your heroes, and I know Matt in previous podcasts and myself have talked about ours, when you feel a connection with a driver, that's what gets you to go to Saturday night. Mm-hmm. I want to go watch that guy wheel the car.
Absolutely.
And that's what drives you back every Saturday. So I think that's a great idea from a fan's perspective, you guys as drivers trying to incorporate more and build a fan club, and because that's going to make me want to drive to Lawrenceburg on Saturday night to watch you race again.
Yeah.
I would love to see the drivers get to the racetrack just a little earlier, and we could bring them up, you know, like at Brownstown, behind the grandstands for autograph sessions or just a meet and greet with the fans. Because I know when I was a kid, you know, after the races, we went to the pits and everything to see the drivers, and that was a big deal to see them out of their car and what they really look like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was a kid, it's like, what's this guy look like? You know, and it made a connection with me. And I wish we could make the drivers more accessible, because even, you know, you're just your local guy that races, you know, at a local track every Saturday. He's a celebrity to somebody, you know, in them grandstands that they would probably love to spend a minute or two with him and talk to him. So
I think that's a great idea, because as soon as you get the fans to know somebody, that gives them more of a reason to go. Because let's face it, racing, dirt racing is nothing better than that, in my opinion. But when you go to a racetrack, let's say you're out of town, you show up at a late model show or a sprint car show, whatever you want to go watch, and you don't know a single person, you never heard of these people, it's not going to be nearly as exciting to you.
That's exactly right.
And as soon as you know, hey, I know that guy, my dad's buddies with him, or I work with that guy, or whatever, and then you have incentive to go. It's like, man, he got somebody rude on. It's like watching your favorite football player. Mm-hmm. It's like, for me, I'm always a huge Peyton Manning fan, and when he retired, it hasn't been the same for me, you know what I mean?
Right.
So it's just, it gives you a reason to go when you get a connection with somebody, and it's like, man, I'm going to really cheer for that guy. Then it gives you passion. When you have passion, it gives you excitement. Without passion, there's no excitement.
But I'm sure you as a driver, you enjoy it when you know there's somebody in the stands that's rooting for you, that is a fan of yours, that isn't family. You know, of course, family's going to be a fan of you, but, you know, when – you know, you get a guy that just comes to the races and has watched you race and starts rooting for you and buys your T-shirt.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that makes you feel like, well, I'm doing the right thing, because this guy is enjoying watching me.
It does. You know, I've met some cool people, too. Most people, I don't know how it is down at Brownstown, because I don't race there very often, but most people, as soon as the races are over, they're loaded up and leaving, and I don't understand it. I'm usually one of the last people to leave, and you wouldn't believe how many cool people I meet that are just fans. You won't come down and have a beer with you and just shake your hand and put their kids in a race car. And you, that moment right there, that's more than anything throughout the night to me, is watching, like, these people. They get so excited when they get to meet and just be able to talk to me. Because, let's face it, it's kind of funny for me how it feels, because I've always been that. I don't feel like I'm a little mini, like, local celebrity, but they look at you as a celebrity.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? So you have to look at it in their perspective, and it makes me excited to know that they look at me as somebody more than just your normal guy, which I'm not, but it makes you feel good to realize that you made their day by giving them time.
And, you know, back when I was in my 20s and just a race fan, and, you know, I'd walk through the pits and everything, and, you know, you'd say hi to a guy that you watched race all night or you looked up to as a race car driver, and if they would take, like I said, it don't have to be, you know, all night, but 2 or 3 minutes just to talk about the night and let you give them input back. The next weekend, I couldn't wait to watch that guy again, because he took 2 minutes out of his evening. Like you said, I liked it when they left the cars unloaded, you know, and they made it welcoming after the fact, you know, for everybody there.
Yeah, it just makes you feel good, you know, because I remember being that way when I was a kid. Like Danny Smith, another one of my heroes, I'll go up there and try to get a T-shirt off of him, and he said, give me a cigarette and $5, you know what I mean? And that meant the world to me, and mm-hmm. He just like another one of my idols, and just people like him and like Dale Blaney spent some time one evening on the back of a trailer when I was 13 and talked to me, so I became a lifelong fan of his. And it just, people don't understand it. They're people too, but they do have time, you know what I mean? So as us racers, we need to try to spend time to entertain these people and try to be their friends instead of just try to be that guy that just wants to go race and don't bother me. I got to go home, you know?
And that's the unique thing about the racing world is you have that connection with these people, because just like you just said, I can't go to the Colts game and then afterwards walk down and, you know, hang out outside the locker room and Peyton come out and talk to me and me have that conversation with him. And you can have that connection in the racing world. You know, if you're willing to go out and talk to these guys, and, you know, most every driver is very open and willing to do that. And I think that's awesome that you do the same, because anybody who listens to this, and I know Matt and I have had a couple of people already come up to us and say, hey man, I'm listening to your podcast and I've never been to the races, but it makes me want to get out and race. That's the most unique thing about the racetrack, is you get the opportunity to walk up and talk to the guys that you just watch go to battle for, you know, an hour.
But I think that's where NASCAR has missed the boat, because they are not accessible to their fans. You know, I know, like, maybe at Charlotte and Talladega, you know, some drivers kind of run the, you know, go to the infield camping a little bit, and they're here and there. And I know, you know, Ryan Blaney and Darrell Wallace Jr., they are two drivers that are making a difference, because they go out and find fans. And people need to take notice of that, because they haven't forgot when they were short track drivers somewhere. And the fans, I mean, that's why they are where they're at, because fans put them there. And, you know, that's why I'm glad you do it. And, you know, I guess me and you didn't realize how much advantage we had of the drivers we had just hung out with.
Oh, man.
You know, we'd go to a race shop somewhere, and, you know, I know when you're young, you went with your dad, and there'd be four or five drivers there, and you're like, holy cow, you know, it's...
That's the thing, is, like, I knew a lot of these guys were my heroes, and they knew me, so it made it a little different. But it's just, you're right about that. And, I mean, I look back, it's like, how in the heck did I fall in this little... the hole that it, and I get to know all these spectacular racers that, I mean, a lot of the world don't know, because they're local guys or they race national level, but they're not NASCAR. But still, to me, it's like, these guys are phenomenal race car drivers. It could have been the best in NASCAR if they had an opportunity. And like, you hit it on the nail on the head with NASCAR. It's unfortunate. And you can see, you look in the grandstands every Sunday, there's not very many people.
No.
Not like it used to be.
No.
Well, and I think it's begun, we kind of talked about this last time too. You just said if these guys would get an opportunity in NASCAR, but the problem is, you know, these corporate sponsors want the guy with the look, that talks the right way, that, you know, kind of the old school, you know, I wrench my car, I come from the dirt tracks. That's not what NASCAR is looking for anymore, and it's too bad, because 20, 30 years ago when those guys were in NASCAR, that's when it was exciting. That's when it had some of that competitive dirt track feel. So that's the other thing to anybody listening. You may think these are just local guys, but especially we're blessed in the state of Indiana and Ohio and Illinois and Kentucky right here, you know, with dirt track racing, because some of the best in the United States race here every Saturday night, and there's an exciting group that do it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, every class at the racetrack, there's so much talent all throughout. If you just go, like, some of the best races you see or, like, the modified races and super stocks, and it's like, did you see that slider that guy put on that move? That was incredible. That guy needs a chance, you know what I mean? And some of these guys don't have the equipment, and they still get their elbows up, and they win these races, you know, and the guys you never hear of. And like, some of these guys I race against, sometimes I go to a different track, and I never seen this guy's picture on the internet or heard this guy's name, and he'll outrun you in a heat race. Like, who in the heck is this guy? You know, and he's out there wheeling the crap out of him, and he still beat me, you know?
And you mentioned that a lot of the guys that don't have the money for the best equipment, but they'll make you run for your money, and you know, they have figured out how to do all they can do with what they have, and to me, that's what grassroots racing is all about. You know, when you show up,
mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And, you know, and around here, like Dustin said, we have the best drivers I think in the United States, and you know, these, you know, four or five states right here that I would put up against anybody else on a dirt track anywhere.
I agree 100% with you there. It's like, there for a while, I was racing with Kyle Larson quite a bit, and I remember racing with him, and I just had to drive so hard, and he understood angles more than anybody I ever seen in my life. Like, he would use, for instance, I was running second one night at Lawrenceburg, and I think it was during midget week, and I'm not sure if he had a midget ride that night. Surely he was running Keith Coons, but he was trying to pass me, and I would get him down the straightaway and on the front stretch and enter one and two. Then he would arc out down a back stretch, and he'd drive across my nose, and he'd get his left front down the infield in three and four because that's where he had to be, on the next to the tires. He did this for 20 laps. And I was like, I never seen anybody do this before. Until he made it dirty enough, the leader and I, we were slipping and sliding, and I can't remember if he won the race or not, but he was able to get around me because he did that. Nobody else I've ever seen do that. And that's when I realized that this dude is going to go to NASCAR because he used his brain while he was racing. He couldn't pass me because he wanted it groove track. So he overdrove the car, ran it, arced it so he can get it down the infield, sling dirt up in the groove, and just wasted 20 laps until he made it dirty enough for him to get the momentum and go around me. And I was like, wow, that's just, I thought it was pretty cool.
I was going to have you explain the term dirty, and I'm glad you went back and told that, is, you know, a lot of people listen and maybe haven't been to a dirt track, and that's what it is. They sling the dirt up onto the groove.
Yeah, it's like loose marbles is what it is.
Yeah.
So it's pretty impressive.
He is, you know, and I'm still a NASCAR fan, not as much as what I have been, but he's one of the reasons why I hold on as much as I do, because he's as exciting to watch on Sunday as anybody. I mean, to see a young guy like Larson, he races the same way there. And that's what I love about him. There is no laying back. There is no waiting. If there's a gap, he's going to take it. If everybody else is running the bottom, he's going to see if the high side will go. If everybody's on the high side, he's going, even though he loves the high side, he's going to try and get down below. And he's always trying to figure out something different to give him advantage. So
that's right. You can tell he ruffles some feathers in that NASCAR deal because he's one of those guys, he's always pouncing and he never gives up. And a driver sometimes mentally can't handle that, you know what I mean, because I'm faster than him, but he's finding a way to keep sticking it in there, and so eventually you're going to crack, and Larson knows how to make you do that. And that guy is just spectacular, man, and he's actually a very humble guy. I've talked to him a couple of times, but it's pretty cool to see him kick butt in NASCAR too.
And I love that he still comes back to the dirt tracks again. That's probably the coolest thing. And I know I'm sure that if he ever got the chance, he'd love to be there more than what he can be, but he still takes his opportunities to jump back in and be back at dirt tracks when he can.
Oh, yeah, and he's phenomenal at it, too.
Oh.
I'll take my hat off to Clint Bowyer on that one, too, because, mm-hmm. You know, he owns two late models. And, you know, when he won Monday, that's what he said, is my dirt boys had a good weekend, too. And that really impressed me. He's in victory lane. The first thing he did was thank his two late model guys, you know, was they had a good weekend. And so, you know, he is giving back to the grassroots, too. He's one that's making some money in NASCAR but giving it back and you know, supporting two dirt late models. So,
which is awesome. It shows you where his heart's at. You know what I mean?
And I watched an interview where he asked why he don't get in them when he goes and watches them. He's like, that's their job. You know, he's like, I don't want to knock them out of a seat just so I can go play. He's like, you know, they're making a living out of that. And so I got to give him credit there. You know, he goes and watches and is a good car owner, but, you know, he lets his drivers drive.
I respect that. That's so cool.
Yeah, and I can't imagine, you know, when you, again, talking about heroes and having that opportunity, you know, when you see these guys come back to the tracks, when you have a car owner that's so involved like Bowyer is, you know, it's got to be exciting as drivers to know these guys have your back, you know, that even though they made it to that level, that they still are able to give back a little bit, you know, and that's what, you know, that Bowyer has kind of had an up-and-down career, but he's definitely on the upswing now. I think he's one of the hot starts that's going to be in NASCAR for a long time, but it's cool to see him remember where he came from.
You going to make it over the No Way Out on April 16th?
I don't know. I would love to. That's on a Friday night, isn't it?
No, it's going to be a Saturday now. So I didn't know if Lawrenceburg was racing that or not.
If they're not racing, I'll be there, but Uncle O.
What about Sprint Week?
I mean, I would love to. I'll have to do that. Sprint Week is so cool. I want to one of these days, maybe next year, I'll get Orville to help back me, and maybe I can find some sponsors if anybody's listening and wants to help me out somewhere. I would like to run the full Sprint Week program one time. I think that'd be really cool to do.
That's actually a bucket list for me as a fan, is to go every night. I've made three of the nights, but I've not made it to every night during Sprint Week. So, I am a late model fan, but I would love to go to Indiana Sprint Week and go to every night of the show. So, that'd be very fun.
Let's just go ahead and throw it out there. I mean, with the podcast, I think that may be a necessity that we find a way to try and make as many as possible that week. So,
any excuse we got to make to go, I'm all for it. You know, you guys know me; I'm a race fan. So let's, you know, if that's what we got to use to go, we'll do it. But that I've never made it. Always something comes up, and I miss it. You know, a night or two every year it seems like. So I never can go to every one of them.
Well, I'll be honest with you; I'm still a race fan too. So if you guys need help from traveling down the road for that, it's easier to go watch than it is to actually get your race car ready and financially do it. So I'm game to go every race too.
Well, we'll definitely get a hold of you, man. More the merrier on that.
That's perfect because, you know, Matt knows I kind of my selfish reason for starting this podcast with Matt was I've told my wife that this just means I have to be at the racetrack on the weekend because I have to know what I'm going to talk about the next week. So she's bought into that for the time being, but I just tell her, hey, it's got to happen because if not, I won't know what to say the next week. So
sounds legit to me.
that's what I told her. He's like, you know, Matt's got to be at Brownstown every Saturday because he, you know, he announces there. So, you know, I got to go to the races too.
I love it. Yeah. You know, we're pretty fortunate with our wives, you know. I have a wife that she's pretty awesome because she pays 60% of the bills, probably more like 70, just so I can go play in the dirt. And I feel like a jerk because of it. But, you know, I'm not going to do this a whole lot longer because I'm approaching 40. And it's one of those deals where how much longer can I afford to do it and how much longer I want to put myself through this punishment. There's eventually going to be a time when I become like a wrencher and just be like a fan again. But I'm going to enjoy it while it lasts. And I love my wife for letting me do it. And I mean, that's pretty awesome to have a supporter like that. And you know, I've tried to quit a couple of times. I've had some concussions and broke the bank a couple of times, you know, and I'm like, I'm down and out. And you know, you get a stretch where you struggle. And you have those times where you win and you kick butt all the time. You're top five, no matter what you do. Then you go where you struggle. You can't even sniff top five. And you don't understand. It's like, I didn't do nothing different. And those are the times that are very challenging and troublesome to you in your mind, and it beats you up so bad. And you know, I've threatened to quit. It's like, I don't think I can do this no more. And she's like, no, you're gonna still race, otherwise you're gonna be that little mopey little brat laying around on the couch crying. So
well, and I'll be honest, I'm glad you brought that up because it's so true. I coached for a long time, coached football, and I don't think sometimes people realize that when things don't go right, it's the spouse that has to deal with it when we come home. And my wife always used to laugh and say, when she knew a Friday night went bad, she just left me alone. Till I spoke to her, she wasn't going to mess with me. And that's kind of the same thing with this little gig that we got started here with the podcast. You know, when I came to her, I said, I got this crazy idea, but I said, I need a hobby. I'm not in coaching anymore. I'm bored to death. I said, I need something. I said, I'm going to do this podcast. And a lot of people's wives would have said, that's silly. There's no way you're going to do this. And my wife said, yeah, let's do it. Let's jump on. And my wife and I do one together and a whole different show. But so it's amazing when you've got that partner in crime that will just absolutely support you no matter what, no matter how crazy it is or how other people look at it and think, really? I would never do that. But that's awesome. And I don't think enough people know what they go through for some of the crazy things that we want to do.
Oh, yeah, I'll be honest with you. Our spouses are the true champions in the racing because, I mean, you face it, the financial burden. They're not the ones having fun. You know, they're just watching the money go out the bank and watching us struggle, you know, in life because racing is so stressful. But, I mean, I wouldn't change it for anything in the world. You know what I mean? You know, I don't care about the money. Or it's the memories and the people I've met and all the friendships like this right here. It's like, getting to hang out with you guys. If it wasn't for racing, though, I mean, I'm enjoying myself, guys, to be honest with you. And it's just, there's so much to racing that makes it your life, and they have to be willing to accept that and let you do it. And I really appreciate all the wives out there for doing what they do. And sometimes there's women out there that awesome race car drivers.
Absolutely.
And the shoes on the other foot. Oh, yeah. And mad respect to them, too. And if you have to have people and family and friends and it's not just about a driver. Like, fans look at us, the drivers, and they think it's just us and there's no maintenance. But there's so many nights. I mean, we all work 40 to 60 hours a week, you know, a full-time job. Then you work 20 hours a week, you know, on race car. And right now I'm stretched out because I'm helping on our Silver Crown car. We got a pavement car, dirt car, and then I have my sprint car. And plus we have a house we're working on. So, I mean, I haven't had a day off much in like the last year and a half, so it's very challenging. you know, you lose that sense of life, because that's all it is racing and working. You're sore, they get up and you get cranky, and they have to deal with that. And I really appreciate the for people out there willing to put up with that, you know.
And you touch on the wives, but when you get home from a bad night of racing, you don't mean for it to, but they catch your grief, you know.
They do.
You know, because they're the one you're the most familiar with, so you're going to vent to them. But, you know, on the good side of that, I guess, when you have a great night, they catch that also, you know, because you want to celebrate with them. And I'm glad you brought that up, because if it wasn't for our spouses and our families, we would have, I mean, I couldn't go work at the racetrack every Saturday night. You know, Dustin couldn't do this, and you couldn't race. I mean, and you are right. That gets forgot a lot, is the people behind the scenes that make everything happen for that one night a week of racing.
It is. It's a snowball effect, man, and people just don't understand. I don't know if it's like tunnel vision or what, but there's so much that goes on behind the scenes. Even sponsors, you know, I mean, you had to have a guy willing to, they say it's a tax write-off, but it's only a small percentage. You still got to be willing to give Joe, you know, a couple grand to go racing on, just so they can go drink a beer and sit in the grandstands and say, hey, my name's on that race car.
Yeah.
So,
absolutely.
I mean, it's just, there's everybody out there that people don't realize. It's just a big puzzle, and you're just a small piece is all it is.
Well, and the other thing I want to throw out there, and again, you know, one thing we hoped with this is that some people would listen and come to the racetrack that maybe never have. And what you just said, when we talk about the passion of race drivers, of race families, of teams, right there it was. You know, this isn't NASCAR. This isn't the NBA. It's not the NFL. And no disrespect meant to you. You're not coming home with multi-millions of dollars and taking an off season off. You're working a job. And I had a good buddy that raced for a long time that used to laugh and say, I don't know how I can be a hero on Saturday night and you know, bottom of the barrel on Monday morning. But that was his gig. You know, he had to work his tail off to be able to do it. And so the same way, that dedication that you have to this sport, man, if you're looking for something to go do on a Saturday night as a family, go check you guys out, because it's not, you don't just get up on Saturday morning and load everything up and head over like you're going to the lake, you know, to tube or fish all day. It's 7 days a week you guys are wrenching on those cars and getting them ready and making sure you can put on the best show. And there's nothing else in the world where guys care as much about what they do as what you guys do through the week.
That's true. And people wonder why, you know, there's fights during racing, like because of a bad slider or something like that. Well, you have to think about it. I've worked my butt off all week, and you just fed me a wheel. It's not about the money. It's the fact that I worked my butt off to get here, and I look forward to this all week, and you just took me out. And that's why you have fights, and you have to think about that when you're out there trying to feed a guy a wheel, too. He's the same as you are. We're both trying to win, so you got to have respect. And fans, I hope, are willing to, like new fans, if they're listening to this, I really hope you guys want to come out and check us out, because local dirt track racing, there's so much passion and you can feel it in the air, so much excitement, cars sliding around. It's something in the smell and the noise.
Oh, yeah.
It's something once you hear it and see it, you're going to be addicted and you're going to be like, man, what am I missing all my life, you know?
But you mentioned the fights on a Saturday night, but there's also a sense of family in the pits with your fellow drivers also, for the simple fact if you break something and they have something, they won't hesitate to let you take it and race that. And you're going to compete against them.
It's true.
But, I mean, you know, you get mad at each other, which is just like family. You're going to get mad and fight. But then if they need something, you're right there for them also. And that sense of family in the pit area is absolutely amazing to watch that also.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I flipped the whole length of the back straightaway at Lawrenceburg one night. And one of my biggest rivals and worst enemies, like off the racetrack we're not enemies, but on the racetrack we are. He went out of his way and let me borrow some equipment to get the car loaded and say, if you need anything for next week. I mean, that just shows you how much of a family we are. Even though we don't talk to each other, we don't necessarily like each other because of how we race against each other, but we're always there for each other when we need the help, because we want to see each other strive. And plus, you know, the rivalry kind of gets your blood going too. It gives you another purpose to be there. And sometimes I think God actually makes it that way. You know what I mean?
Well, that also makes the fans, they're going to come back next week because, you know, if you and him have an issue,
yeah,
well, what's going to happen next week? So they're going to come back just to see that rivalry. So, you know, you take one piece out of there, you know, the entertainment on the track isn't going to be the same.
That's very true. It's very true.
Well, and it goes back to what you said earlier, too, getting to race against some of these guys. He doesn't want you not to show up next week because you didn't have a part. If you're going to win it, I want to win it with you on the track. You know, I want to be able to walk through pit road and say, hey, I did this. You know, you were here. You were at your full strength. You had it, but I had the better car tonight, or I made the better move. So I think it's important, too, that, you know, that sense of family, you guys really want everybody on the track that's the best competition you can see.
Oh, absolutely. I won a race one time in Illinois where there was only about 16 cars there, and I showed up after we unloaded. There's only, like, maybe one or two of the guys I had to beat, but they weren't – I'm not saying I'm good, but they were about my level or not as good. So I was like, I have to win this race. And I won, and it wasn't gratifying to me. It's like running over here where there's – each time I show up, there's 20 other guys that can kick my butt any minute. And, you know, that gives you a fire in your belly, and that's what makes you excited. And that guy, like we were just talking about, the rival – I mean, when you beat that guy, that's what makes you come back. You don't want it easy. You don't want it to be like racing against a bunch of amateurs. I mean, what fun is that? You know what I mean?
Right. Well, and you know, the other thing there, too, is, you know, it became an expectation for you. I have to win this race. You're going to be mad, disappointed if you don't. You can go to race at Lawrenceburg against some of these guys, and you may know coming in after a feature that, hey, man, I finished third, and that was everything my car had. That was everything I had, because those two guys were just, they had me tonight. So now I'm going to go home and I'm going to wrench and I'm going to figure out what I need to do to make sure I run with them up front next week. So,
oh yeah. There's been many nights, even at Lawrenceburg, I've unloaded on a local show, and there's been a handful of USAC guys show up. I'm like, man, if I run seventh tonight, I'm doing good. And I end up running fifth. I'm like, man, I was like winning a race. You know what I mean?
Who's the one guy that you haven't raced against yet that you would love to race wheel to wheel with?
Man, Tony Stewart, because I grew up with him, because his nickname for me is Pick. It's not because I pick my nose. It's a little bit true, but not really. I've always played guitar, so he always called me Pick. But Tony Stewart, you know, he's one of my heroes, and that guy's phenomenal. And my dad's always painted for him. And we haven't seen him much in the last 10 years because he's gone on NASCAR land, but I love that guy, and people get the wrong image of him. Just for you people out there, huge Stewart fans, or people who are not, I'm going to put it in perspective how he is. And he explained it to me one night when we were drinking beer together. Sounds like I drink a lot of beer, don't it? But anyways, he's like, Moff, he goes, the problem I have is, like, I'll go to Steak and Shake, for instance, or Applebee's. He likes to eat Applebee's a lot. Or some of these other places, and right in the middle of my dinner, people want to come up and get their picture taken. Time job. I'm never off work when that happens. Hey, I'd rather you just come up to me and say, hey, man, you're Tony Stewart, shake my hand, and that's all. And he goes, I get a little rude and say I won't sign your T-shirt or give you an autograph for your little boy Bobby or whatever, and it makes people get a bad image about him, and people need to understand he's human like us too. Yeah. But he has a big heart. Great personality, great sense of humor, and probably one of the best race car drivers I've ever seen. And I want to race with him wheel to wheel in a sprint car or a late model. He would kick my butt in a late model. He's done a lot, but I'll try it.
He does good things for the sport, and he's another one who tries to give back to the community. You know, Columbus, Indiana, he shows up whenever he can. You know, my buddy Nick Megal owns a TQ midget. And when his son raced the Columbus Fair race in a TQ, Tony Stewart lined up in TQ outside of him there, you know. So it's like, you know, Tony had a night off, so he showed up at Columbus Fair to race.
And that made that guy's night, I guarantee.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's like, well, that's my hero. It's like, I'm gonna put another race in perspective. Like, when it came to that situation, there's an outlaw show I ran at Kokomo Speedway one year. I think it was 2006. And we was rolling around there for hot laps, and I had Sammy Swindell, Steve Kinder, Jack Hodenshield, and a couple, and Tyler Walker, and those guys are out there. And I'm not going to lie. Before we took the green flag, I literally had tears rolling down my cheek, because I was like, wow, this is so cool. I'm on the same racetrack in a sprint car with the best in the history of sprint car racing.
Well, and that's, you know, and going back, I grew up south of Bloomington and love going there and watching the sprint cars on, you know, Friday nights. But when the World of Outlaws would come in there and you get to see Kinzer and Sammy Swindell and, you know, these guys hit that track, there was a magic there like nothing else, because this was going to be special. And I remember my dad and I laughed one time. There was one year, it was probably 97 or 98, and I think it stormed and rained them out two or three times, and we would sit there and we'd go to the truck and we'd sit out in the truck and dad would say, "You ready to go home?" And I'd say, "No," and they may still run. And then they'd come back out and start working the track. And, you know, it was just, I did not want to be that kid at, you know, at that point, 12 or 13 years old, that said, "Yeah, let's go home, I'm good." And then find out they somehow got it in, and until they turned the lights off, I wasn't leaving, because I wanted to see those guys on that track.
Oh, absolutely. I think Dave Blaney won that night.
That takes me back to a night at Brownstown that it rained, and we did, like you said, we sat in the truck, and we waited, and they thought they was going to try, so they was out trying to wheel pack, you know, get the track in. And I remember they made an announcement, you know, over the intercom that if you were willing to drive your vehicle out to help wheel pack, wow, they would appreciate it, because you know, they realized they didn't have enough track vehicles to get it, you know, get it ran in as quick as they wanted to. And I was 20 or 21 years old and had a Chevy four-wheel drive, and I remember my brother was with me, looking at my brother, and was like, "Let's, you know, we'd lock it in four-wheel drive and we go out and I'm wheel packing Brownstown Speedway." And I'll tell you what, you know, I've never been a driver, but that was like, exciting to me that I got the wheel pack at Brownstown.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. That's exhilarating, man. I couldn't imagine. That's
what, my dad, when we first moved to Indiana, dug a pond, and same thing, needed to pack it. And I can remember, you know, being a young kid, I get out there in his truck, because that was he was going to let me drive at 10 years old and drive around that pond. To me, that was like I was at the racetrack. There was nobody else out there, but I had a vehicle, I had a lot of dirt, and this was my one chance I was going to get a drive. I didn't pack the middle as well as what he probably wanted it, but the outside edges were really, really good.
I got laid off in 2008 for about a couple weeks. It wasn't very long, and I was like, "Dave Rudis, I need something to do." She's like, "Come down and help me work at the racetrack." He goes, "I'll pay you." He actually gave me $150. Hey, I think he felt sorry for me. So I go out there, and he has like a 1994 Chevy pickup truck, short bed, you know what I mean? So he's like, "Hey, we have to run the track backwards."
Yeah.
This is on a Wednesday night, and this is no joke. I mean, people don't think he does, but he works on that track almost every night of the week. He's impressive. But he's like, "I need you. I'll be on the tractor." And he actually let me till a track with a tractor once. I never drove a tractor. So he's like, "I need you to be up against the fence packing track as close as you can. I'm going to make some laps too in the other truck." And I'm not lying to you, it's no exaggeration. And the paint is already wore off that driver's side mirror. That thing was rubbing the wall. I hear like, shh, shh, every once in a while. I was like, "Man, I'm going to tear up his mirror." And I told him about it. He goes, "No, that's what I wanted you to do."
That's when you know you're close enough, when you hear the mirror hit.
Yeah, my butthole was puckering more driving that truck than my sprint car.
Well, we're at about an hour and 15 minutes. You know, I'm going to ask you one more time, just because I want to make sure that we get them in. You know, can you run your sponsors down one more time? I want to make sure that they get a, you know, a shout out here.
Yeah, man, I can do that. Momentum Racing Suspensions, Hoosier Tire, Simpson Racing Products. I have Roger Williams Precision Engines. I have Orville Wright and Nate Brennan Lawn Care. I'm trying to think who else. Line Coatings does every once in a while. They didn't do that this year, but I'll still throw them out there because there's a future potential there. And Kevin Thomas Racing Services, and I think that's it, besides little Joss Moffat here.
better think dad and wife, too, while you're at
it.
Yeah,
my dad, Billy Moffat, and my wife, Angel Miller Moffat. She's redheaded, but I call her my evil ginger.
I got a redheaded mother. I understand all about that.
Hey, I'd love to have you back, but have you bring dad one, because
let's do this.
Your dad has some of the greatest story, because I mean, you know, I don't really know how old your dad is, but he, you know, when we hung out there at my neighbor's when you was younger, your dad would tell stories, and I mean, he would amaze you for hours, and I would just love to have him come on and tell his, you know.
We need to do that. You know, maybe sometime soon. Maybe care if we do this and we just have like racing stories and dad stories. If anybody be interested, maybe you guys could figure that out. I mean, I think that'd be a good time.
Absolutely, I think that'd be a blast.
Anybody that's been to a sprint car race in the last, I know 30 to 40 years, they know Billy Moffitt. I mean, you know, he has been around. I mean, like I said, he's probably the most famous guy that never sat in the seat of a sprint car at a sprint car race ever. So, I'd like to see your dad again because I haven't seen him for forever anyway. So, yeah, well, I'll get back a hold of him. You come down and bring dad, and we'll have a night of sprint car stories. How's that sound?
We'll do that. That sounds good to me.
I love it. Well, before we leave, I do want to throw out our sponsors, In the Fast Lane Productions. If you haven't checked out last week's episode, Ryan Bowling was on with us, kind of talking about In the Fast Lane and where they're headed. So InTheFastLaneProductions.com, the new website, is going to be up here shortly. Maybe up already. I know Ryan texted me on Monday and said that it was going to be live soon. So it may be up already. So check out In the Fast Lane Productions. And then Schaefer Photo and Custom Tee, the official track photographer for Brownstown Speedway. Again, if you're looking for some kind of gift for a race fan in your life, check out Schaefer Photo and Custom Tee. They do a terrific job making sure that every picture is, you know, edited and centered and the best quality you can get. Check out their trailer. Once we get out of Mother Nature and she wants to let us get out and play a little bit, check out their trailer behind the grandstands at Brownstown Speedway. Last one again, Kenny Montgomery. Thank you to Kenny Montgomery for allowing us to use his new song, Dirt, as our intro music. And again, we'll let it play out here at the end of the episode. So again, huge shout out to Kenny. Hopefully going to get him on the podcast here in the next month or so. Get him to call in and do a little bit of an interview. And last, again, I said this last week, but I want to throw it out one more time because I know he's gonna throw us out too. If you're looking for another racing podcast to listen to, check out the Briscoe Breakdown with Toby Wedgwood, good buddy of mine, Toby. Kind of following Chase and what he's doing in the Xfinity Series. He's kind of bouncing around on a lot of things, racing some races in Xfinity. I know he's going to be back out with his dirt sprint car team. So check out the Briscoe Breakdown with Toby Wedgwood.
Also, if it does quit raining, first points night will be this Saturday at Brownstown.
Absolutely.
So if Mother Nature is kind enough and the water can go away, that we're going to try to race at Brownstown, be points night, and you're going to race at Lawrenceburg this Saturday night?
That's my plan, the USAC Sprint Car Show.
Good deal.
All right. Well, Josh, I want to tell you thanks a lot. I mean, I really appreciate you coming down. I've had a blast. I hope you've had some fun. Let's definitely make it happen with getting your dad in here, and it would be great if we got some other guys just to tell some old war stories in here. And I think that'd be a really fun episode. But I appreciate you coming down and spending time with us.
I really want to thank both of you guys, and I appreciate you letting me come on this show. It's been a lot of fun. Pretty cool deal. I really like what you have going on. I think everybody has a good time. So, and everybody wants to tune in if my dad comes, because old Wild Bill is going to get crazy in here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it'll be crazy.
All right. Well, everybody have a good week. And, hey, if Mother Nature holds off, get to a dirt track somewhere on Saturday night. Thank you.
I'm from that dirt, 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 dirt. I'm all about that dirt, 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 dirt. I'm throwing dirt, 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 dirt. I miss that dirt, 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 dirt. Gotta get back to it. I'm a dirt trackaholic. Call it what you call it. Saturday night, I am so Kenny Wallace on that dirt, 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 dirt. I miss that dirt. Dirt. Gotta get back to it. I've been the Kenny Wallace of the rap game. Woo! Ever since I hit him with that dirt track thing. Yeah. Now nationwide, everybody knows my name. They're like, mama, that's Kenny Montgomery. He sings that song we like. Yeah.
Yeah, boy, that's me. Roll out the trailer, I'm flossing. Them Hoosier tires glossing. Them cold kind, we're tossing. They know I came to wreck it, yet I rarely bring out a caution. I hit the high side, boy, I park it for Brian Clausen. I do them like Kyle Larson. Watch me throw them sliders. Party in Victory Lane, and y'all boys ain't invited. Your mama gets excited when I pull up to unload. Even your grandpa talking about, man, that boy too cold. We don't sit on 24s, we don't ride on spinners. I'm posted up on them 15s with platinum dirt defenders. Got kids up in my window like, hey, Mo, are you gonna win it? Yeah, I hope y'all brought some stamps, cause y'all know I'm about to send it on it. Dirt, 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 I'm all about that. Dirt, 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 I'm throwing. Dirt, 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 I miss that. Dirt, 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 dirt,
gotta get back to
I'm
it.
I'm a dirt trackaholic, call it what you call it. Saturday night, I am so Kenny Wallace on that. Dirt, 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 I miss that. Dirt, 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 dirt,
gotta get back to it.
I just won hot laps for the third week. Lil Dave said he thinks we're in the first heat. So I go and check the board on my bike. Sitting outside pole, y'all know what it's looking like. W, W, that's another George W. Hit him with that half a lap like, dang, what gear you running, dude? And where'd you get that fire suit? Man, I like that stitching. Velocity USA, hey, just tell Brad that I sent you. I'm shining like I'm rubbered up and I'm smiling for the pics.
Say cheese.
Y'all boys be looking tacky while I stay looking slick.
So short.
Four new rims, no new friends. They never know what I'm planning.
Never.
And mama just gave me them eyes like, dang, baby, you looking handsome.
Hey,
we pray and sing the anthem. Nobody takes a knee. We stop and show respect because we're all proud to be.
That's right.
From the land of the free and the home of the brave. Y'all better wake up and get it. We're making America great again. Let's all go out and kick it on it. Dirt, 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 I'm all about that. Dirt, 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 I'm throwing. Dirt, 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 I miss that. Dirt, 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 dirt,
gotta get back to
I'm
it.
I'm a dirt trackaholic, call it what you call it. Saturday night, I am so Kenny Wallace on that. Dirt, 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 I miss that. Dirt, 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 dirt,
gotta get back to it.